So, if you are earning, say, 50 grand a year, you probably assume the state isn't going to give you a single cent toward your health care.
Right. Yeah. That's the standard assumption.
Because, I mean, you look at your gross salary, you look at the tax you pay every month, and you just figure that benefits are strictly for people with, absolutely zero income.
Exactly. People think it's a closed door.
Right. But what if I told you that your massive monthly rent payment or that absolute mountain of childcare costs you face every month? What if that is the exact loophole the health system uses to give you free doctor visits?
Yeah, that is the core misunderstanding we are tackling today. Because the assumption that holding down a full-time job automatically disqualifies you from state healthcare support, well, it's honestly one of the most expensive assumptions a working person can make.
It really is.
And we are looking at a stack of official health service executive documents today, along with citizens' information guidelines. This includes the forms and limits updated for the year 2025. And what those documents actually reveal is a system that is surprisingly acutely aware of the cost of living.
And that is exactly why we are doing this deep dive today. We're
Yeah.
talking directly to you. Yes, you, the working Irish renter, or, the family age somewhere between 30 and 55.
Squeezed middle.
Exactly, the squeezed middle, the people who are just juggling high rents, mortgages, and the general financial friction of modern life. So our mission today is to translate these official 2025 guidelines into plain, reassuring English.
Which is much needed because the forms can be dense.
Very dense. But we want to shatter that misconception that a decent salary on paper means you are just completely locked out of the system. I always think of it like people treat health benefits like this exclusive VIP club, right? And the bouncer at the door only lets in people with zero income. But what if the bouncer isn't looking at what you earn, but what you actually have left over at the end of the week?
That's a great analogy because the math in these guidelines might genuinely shock people. The system isn't just looking at the top line number on your employment contract.
Right, the gross pay.
Exactly. It's looking at the reality of your bank account after the necessary bills are paid. But to understand how that math works, we first need to define what it is we're actually applying for because there are two distinct tiers of support outlined in the sources.
Okay, let's break those down.
So you have the medical card and you have the GP visit card.
Right. And I want to start with the full medical card because I think a lot of people view this as like the golden ticket of the Irish healthcare system.
It really is the comprehensive option.
Based on the 2025 guidelines we have right here, what does this card actually cover? Because it seems to go way beyond just, seeing a doctor.
Oh, it goes far beyond that.
Right.
It is incredibly comprehensive. The medical card is designed to be a complete safety net across almost all aspects of healthcare. So if you qualify for this, you do not have to pay to see your family doctor, your GP.
Okay, so that's the baseline.
Right. But it also covers your prescription medicines. Though, it is important to state the exact figure from the guidelines here. There is a strict €2.50 charge per item dispensed at the pharmacy.
Okay, wait, €2.50 per item. So it's not completely, totally free at the pharmacy counter?
No, not entirely free.
But I mean, compared to the private cost of some medications, which can run into the tens or even hundreds of euros a month for some people, that €2.50 is a massive shield.
It is a massive shield, and the coverage extends much further than just prescriptions. The medical card covers certain dental services. It covers ophthalmic services, which basically means eye tests and spectacles.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and oral services, which covers ear health.
Yeah.
And the guidelines explicitly state it covers hospital care as well.
Wait, really? Hospital care is fully covered.
Yes, encompassing both inpatient services in public wards and outpatient services in public hospitals. And that includes public consultant services.
That is a huge point to linger on for a second. Hospital care in a public ward, both inpatient and outpatient. So if you need to be admitted or, if you need to see a specialist in a public capacity, that card just removes the financial barrier entirely.
Exactly. It removes that massive stress.
What about maternity care?
The sources outline that it covers medical and midwifery care for mothers. So this includes all health care related to the pregnancy itself. And crucially, it extends to the care of the child for exactly 6 weeks after birth.
6 weeks post-birth. Okay, that's a very specific window.
Very specific, but a critical one for those early developmental checks and obviously the mother's recovery.
Yeah,
And the
absolutely.
specificity just continues across other services. For instance, the medical card covers routine blood tests.
Okay.
However, the HSE text does include a little caveat there. Your GP might charge you if a blood test isn't considered routine.
Ah, Okay, so there's a bit of nuance there depending on what the test is for.
Right. Furthermore, looking at the audiology sources we have, the medical card covers free hearing aids.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and even the repair or replacement of those hearing aids, provided there is a clinical reason to do so.
So if we look at the medical card, it really is the all-inclusive tier. I mean, it's the hospital, the doctor, the eyes, the teeth, the ears, the maternity ward. It's the whole package.
It is the ultimate safety net, yes.
But for the vast majority of working professionals listening right now, you know, the people dealing with the high rent and the childcare, they might not qualify for that all-inclusive tier. That might be just a bit out of reach.
Statistically, yes, that's likely.
So they are likely aiming for the second option we mentioned. The GP visit card. Let's break that one down.
Yeah, so the GP visit card is a much more targeted benefit. The guidelines specify this is for people aged 8 to 69.
8 to 69.
Yes, and we will definitely explore why that specific age bracket is isolated later on. But for that demographic, the GP visit card strictly covers your visits to a participating family doctor without you having to pay the consultation fee.
Okay, so just the visit.
Literally just the visit. So if you have this card, you still pay the full private cost for your prescription medicines at the pharmacy.
Right.
You still pay for your dental care, your eye tests, your blood tests if they aren't covered by other specific schemes and so on.
I always like to think of the GP visit card as a kind of financial fire door.
A fire door? Okay, how so?
Well, it doesn't pay to rebuild your whole house if it burns down, meaning it doesn't cover those massive hospital stays or the expensive ongoing prescriptions like the medical card does.
Right.
But it stops a small financial spark from turning into a massive disaster. Mm-hmm. You know, if you wake up with a bad cough or your teenager has an ear infection, a 70-euro GP fee might be the friction that makes you say, let's just wait a few days and see if it gets better.
Which is dangerous.
Exactly. The GP visit card removes that friction. It gets you into the room with a medical professional early.
And that concept, removing that early friction, is exactly why these two distinct cards exist with two completely distinct sets of financial rules.
Okay.
The state recognizes the value of primary care. It is much better and, frankly, cheaper for the health system as a whole if you go to the doctor when you first feel unwell.
Preventative care, basically.
Exactly. Because the state wants to encourage that early intervention, the financial barriers to entry for the GP visit card are significantly lower than they are for the full medical card.
And this brings us to the absolute most crucial part of this entire deep dive.
Yeah.
This is the moment we address you, the listener, who thinks you earn too much. We really need to talk about why so many working people qualify for this GP visit card without realizing it.
It's a huge blind spot for a lot of people.
It is. And it all hinges on a very specific philosophy the HSE uses when they look at your income.
It does. There is a direct quote from the official HSE sources that completely upends how most people think about means testing. I have it right here.
Read it out because this is wild.
The document states, "It's possible that you may qualify for a GP visit card, even if the amount of money you earn is high. If your expenses are also high, you could still qualify."
I just want to stop and frame that for a second.
Yeah.
Because that is a radical departure from how we usually talk about state benefits.
It completely flips the script.
Usually, there is a hard ceiling, right? A line in the sand. You earn 1 euro over the limit, you get nothing.
Right.
But the HSE is explicitly saying here, even if the amount of money you earn is high, they are acknowledging that a high growth salary doesn't always equal a wealthy reality.
Exactly. The system is acknowledging the concept of disposable income versus gross income. There is no universal hard cap on gross salary that instantly throws your application in the bin.
That is so important to hear.
The GP visit card is designed to have much higher income limits than the medical card, specifically to capture what we might call the squeezed middle class.
Right.
People who are working full-time, taking home a decent wage, but are facing extraordinary living costs in 2025.
It's going back to that bouncer at the door of the club.
Yeah.
You walk up and you just assume he's going to look at your 50,000 or 60,000 euro gross salary and tell you to get lost.
But he doesn't.
He doesn't. The bouncer isn't looking at what you earn on paper. He's looking at what you actually have left in your pocket at the end of the week after the landlord and the creche have taken their cut.
That is the core mechanism of the means test right there. It is a highly individualized calculation. They are not asking, do you earn more than 40,000 euros a year?
Okay, what are they asking?
They are asking, based on your unique living situation, your family size, and the specific allowable bills you have to pay every rent, do you have enough money left over to afford basic medical care?
So if it's an individualized calculation, we really need to look under the hood. We need to understand the machinery of this means test.
We do. We need to look at the formula.
Right. Because if someone is listening to this while they're commuting or, you know, cooking dinner, how do they figure out what their personal financial hurdle is?
Let's get into the step-by-step math for people under the age of 66.
Okay, so the means test for people under 66 is built on a specific formula to create your unique threshold. Think of this threshold as your customized finish line.
Customized finish line? I like that.
If your actual income is below this customized threshold, you get the card. And the formula has three parts: a basic rate, plus an amount for your dependents, plus your allowable expenses.
Okay, I'm writing this down. Basic rate, plus dependents, plus allowable expenses.
That's the formula.
And before we put hard numbers to those, we need to define income. Because if my gross pay is 1,000 euros a week, but the tax man takes 300, it's really not fair to assess me on money I never even saw.
The HSE completely agrees with that logic. Oh, thank God.
Yeah, the guidelines are clear that the income assessed is your net weekly income. That is your take-home pay after tax, after pay-related social insurance, which is PRSI, and after the universal social charge the USE have been deducted.
That is a massive relief. It is strictly your take-home pay.
Yes. However, it is important to note that this net income assessment is comprehensive.
Getting what exactly?
It includes your wages from employment, obviously, but it also includes any social welfare payments you receive, any pensions, any rental income you might get from a property, and income generated from savings and investments.
Okay.
So it is your total incoming cash flow, but strictly the net amount.
Got it. Total cash flow, but only the money that actually hits your bank account.
Precisely.
Okay. So we know we are working with our net take-home pay. Let's build out that customized threshold formula, starting with part one, the basic rate. What are the exact figures from the 2025 HSE guidelines? I want to think of this basic rate as like the state's calculation of your baseline survival rate before any medical costs are factored in.
That's a good way to frame it. The basic rate depends entirely on your living situation for anyone aged 69 and under. The guidelines state that if you are a single person living alone, your fixed basic rate for 2025 is 418 euros a week.
418 euros a week just to exist as a single person living alone.
Correct.
What if you aren't living alone? Like, what if you are a single professional, you have a job, but you had to move back into your parents' house because the rental market is just a nightmare right now?
The system does account for shared household costs. If you are a single person living with your family, the basic rate drops slightly. The exact figure for 2025 is 373 euros a week.
Okay, 373. That makes sense logically. If you live with family, the assumption is you are sharing the burden of heating, electricity, and groceries.
Exactly. The overheads are shared.
What about couples and parents?
If you are a married or cohabiting couple, whether you have children or not, your combined basic rate is set at 607 euros a week.
607?
Yes. And significantly, the guidelines state that if you are a single parent, your basic rate is also that exact same higher figure of 607 euros a week.
Wow. Okay. So the state recognizes that a single parent faces essentially the exact same baseline household running costs as a two-adult household.
They do, yeah.
That's a really vital protection to have in there. Okay, so that's part one, the foundation. 418 for a single person living alone, 607 for a couple or a single parent.
Right.
Now let's move to part two of the formula, dependents. How does the system bend to accommodate the cost of raising children?
So the HSE adds a specific allowance to your threshold for every child that is financially dependent on you. And the figures are broken down by age and by family size.
Okay, give me the numbers.
For the first two children under the age of 16, they add exactly 57 euros each to your weekly threshold.
57 each.
Yes. If you have a third child or subsequent children under 16, that figure increases slightly to 61 euros and 50 cents each.
Okay, so having young children actually raises the bar of how much you are allowed to earn. You get an extra 57 euros a week added to your hurdle for the first two kids.
Exactly. It pushes your customized finish line higher.
What happens when they get older? Because teenagers aren't exactly cheap to feed.
True. The allowance does increase as they grow. If the children are over 16 but still financially dependent on you, The 2025 limits state that for the first two, they add €58.50 each to your threshold.
Okay.
For the third and subsequent children over 16, the figure is €64 each.
Right. I was actually looking at these numbers earlier, and while an extra $58.50 a week for a teenager is definitely helpful, it's the next category that really caught my eye. There is a massive jump in the allowance if that dependent child goes to college, right?
Yes, there is. There's a very specific and substantial provision in the HSE guidelines regarding third-level education.
Unpack that for us.
If you have a dependent child over the age of 16 who is in full-time third-level education, and crucially, they are not grant-aided, the HSE adds exactly €117 to your weekly threshold for that child.
€117 a week.
Every single week.
That is a massive buffer. I mean, you multiply that out, that's over €6,000 a year added to your allowable income limit just because your kid is in college without a grant.
It is huge.
It really shows the system is genuinely trying to capture the intense financial strain of funding a university education out of pocket.
It is easily one of the most significant adjustments in the dependence category.
Absolutely.
Now, before we move to the final part of the formula, the allowable expenses, we must address the issue of savings.
Yes, please. Because the way the HSE assesses income from savings is, I think, a major psychological barrier that stops people from even attempting to apply in the first place.
It stops a lot of people.
I hear this all the time. Someone is renting, but they are desperately trying to save a deposit for a house.
Right.
So they might have, say, $30,000 sitting in a credit union. They look at the GP visit card and think, well, the state isn't going to give me free health care when I have $30,000 sitting in the bank. They'll tell me to spend that first. Does this means test punish financial prudence?
Short answer, no, it does not. The guidelines include a very specific savings buffer designed exactly so you aren't penalized for trying to build financial security.
Okay, how does the buffer work?
If you are a single person, the HSE completely ignores the first €36,000 of your savings, investments, or property.
Wait, completely ignores?
Yes. And I should also clarify that the family home, if you own one, is completely excluded from this calculation anyway.
Right, your primary residence doesn't count.
Exactly. But regarding liquid savings, the first $36,000 simply does not exist for the purpose of this means test.
They literally just pretend it's not there.
They do.
So you can have $36,000 in a savings account, and it has zero impact on your application. What if you are a couple trying to buy a house and you're saving together?
For a married or cohabiting couple, that buffer doubles. The HSE ignores the first €72,000 of your savings.
$72,000.
Again, zero impact on your application.
That is fantastic news. It entirely removes that fear of being punished just for saving for a deposit?
It does.
But what happens if someone has had, you know, a windfall or they sold a property and they have more than that? What if a single person has $50,000 saved? How does the math handle the amount above that $36,000 buffer?
It operates on a sliding scale, and it scales very, very slowly. Let's use your example. A single person with €50,000 in savings.
Okay.
The first $36,000 is ignored completely. For the bracket between $36,000 and €1 and €46,000, the guidelines state they add exactly €1 to your weekly income assessment for every €1,000 you have.
Okay, so that next €10,000 of savings adds exactly €10 a week to your assessed income.
Correct. Then, for the bracket between €46,000 and €1 and €56,000, they add exactly €2 per €1,000.
Right.
So the final €4,000 of your €50,000 savings adds exactly €8 a week.
Let me do that math.
In total, having €50,000 in the bank only adds €18 a week to your assessed weekly income.
€18 a week. That is such a marginal impact. I mean, it is barely going to move the needle on a weekly calculation.
It really isn't.
What about a couple with significant savings, say €150,000? Maybe they inherited some money, but their day-to-day wages are actually quite low.
The official sources actually provide an exact breakdown for the scenario.
Oh, perfect.
For a couple with €150,000, the first $72,000 is entirely ignored.
Okay.
The next bracket is from $72,001 to $82,000, which is assessed at €1 per thousand. That adds €10. The following bracket from $82,001 to $92,000 is assessed at €2 per thousand, which adds €20.
Right.
And for anything over €92,000, they add exactly €4 per thousand. So in this case, the remaining 58,000 adds 232 euros.
So even with 150 grand in liquid savings, it only adds a total of 262 euros to their weekly assessed income.
Correct.
I mean, it's certainly a factor at that level, but it is not an automatic blanket disqualification. It proves what you were saying earlier. This means test isn't a high jump bar set at a fixed height. It's a custom-built hurdle that lowers itself depending on your life circumstances.
That is a very accurate assessment. The basic rate and the dependence allowance form the foundation of that hurdle. But the third part of the formula is what truly lowers the bar for working people. We need to examine the allowable expenses.
This is where the magic happens.
It is.
Because the basic rate is just the starting point. The absolute core reason you, the listener, probably qualify for this card right now without even knowing it, lies in these specific expenses.
Exactly.
The HSE allows you to deduct the heaviest financial burdens of modern life before they even look at your income. What exactly are the allowable expenses listed in the 2025 documents?
The list is very specific, and it covers the major outgoings of a modern working household. You can include rent payments, mortgage payments, childcare costs, travel to work costs, maintenance payments you make to someone else, the net cost of private nursing home care, your mortgage protection premium, and life insurance specifically for mortgage protection.
Rent, mortgage, childcare, travel to work. I mean, these are the absolute heavy hitters.
The biggest drains on an account.
These are the things that drain a bank account dry by the fifth of the month.
Yeah.
I want to spend a lot of time here because to prove how powerful these deductions are, the HSE sources provide incredibly detailed real-world examples.
They do, and they're very revealing.
We are going to synthesize the principles of these examples because this is where the abstract theory we've been talking about becomes a concrete reality.
Let's do it.
Let's start by imagining a single professional living in a city paying modern rental prices.
Okay, let's construct that scenario based strictly on the methodology and the sources. Imagine a single person, let's say Sinead, living alone. She has a net monthly income take-home pay after tax of exactly 3,100 euros.
3,100 net a month.
Right.
That's a very solid professional salary. Most people taking home over 3 grand a month would just assume they are far, far beyond the reach of any state support. They wouldn't even think to open the HSE website.
And that is the assumption we are challenging, because Sinead pays exactly 1,250 euros a month in rent.
Ouch.
Yeah. And her travel costs to work are 22 euros a week. Here is exactly how the HSE calculates her unique threshold.
Walk me through it.
First, we establish her basic rate. As a single person living alone in 2025, that is 418 euros.
Okay, 418.
Next, we must convert her monthly rent into a weekly figure. You take the 1,250 euros, multiply it by 12 months, and divide by 52 weeks.
Right.
That gives a weekly rent expense of exactly 288 euros and 46 cents.
Okay.
Finally, we add her weekly travel costs of 22 euros.
Okay, let me follow the math here. We take the baseline survival rate of 418 euros. We add the weekly rent of 288 euros and 46 cents. And we add the travel of 22 euros.
Correct. You add those three figures together, and it brings this person's unique qualifying financial threshold to exactly 728 euros and 46 cents a week.
Wow.
That is her custom hurdle. If her actual net weekly income is below that number, she qualifies.
Right. So we need to figure out her actual weekly income now.
Yeah.
We take her 3,100 monthly take-home pay, multiply by 12, divide by 52. That means her net weekly income is exactly 715 euros and 38 cents.
Precisely. Now, let's compare the two numbers. Her actual weekly income is 715 euros and 38 cents. Her customized threshold, the amount she is allowed to earn, is 728 euros and 46 cents.
So,
because her income is lower than her threshold, this single professional qualifies for the GP visit card.
That is incredible. I mean, she qualifies by a margin of just over 13 euros a week.
But she qualifies.
But she qualifies. And when you look at the math, her rent is literally the mechanism that got her the card.
It is the defining factor.
The state is acknowledging that a 3,100 take-home pay doesn't actually mean much when your landlord is taking 1,250 of it. The high rent isn't just a burden. In the eyes of the HSE means test, it is the exact lever that pulls a high gross salary down to a qualifying level.
It is a mathematical acknowledgement of the cost of living. And the impact is even more profound when we look at a family scenario.
Let's do a family one.
Let's examine the principles of a complex family calculation from the sources. Imagine Barry and Mary, a married couple with two children under the age of 16.
The classic squeezed middle family. What does their financial picture look like in this scenario?
Their combined net monthly income, the take-home pay for both parents, is exactly 5,450 euros.
5,450 net a month flowing into the household. Again, on paper, that sounds like a very comfortable life. But when you add two kids and a mortgage into the mix, that money just evaporates quickly.
It really does.
What are their allowable expenses?
They have a monthly mortgage payment of 1,200 euros. They have a mortgage protection policy costing 52 euros a month.
Okay.
The guidelines explicitly allow travel to work costs. In this scenario, one parent spends 14 euros and 40 cents a week on petrol, and the other parent pays 28 euros a week for public transport via a Leap card.
Nice to see public transport covered.
Yes. But the most crucial expense here is childcare. Their childcare costs are 1,472 euros a month.
Stop right there.
Yeah.
Childcare. 1,472 euros a month is essentially a second mortgage.
It is.
It is an astronomical expense. But this raises a very important question. How does the HSC handle this if the family is getting a government subsidy?
Huh.
For example, if I get a government grant for my childcare, can I claim the full gross childcare bill as an allowable expense to artificially inflate my threshold?
No. The HSE guidelines are absolute on this point. You cannot double dip.
Right.
If you receive a government allowance or grant towards any allowable expense, you cannot count the overall gross amount. You are only permitted to count your net out-of-pocket contribution.
Okay, let's break that down with the numbers.
To use the numbers from the source example, the gross childcare bill is 1,472 euros a month, which converts to 339 euros and 69 cents a week.
Right.
However, this family receives exactly 126 euros a week towards that cost through the National Child Care Scheme, or NCS.
The NCS.
Therefore, the HSE deducts at 126 euros. The actual allowable expense the family can claim for childcare is their net difference. Exactly 213 euros and 69 cents a week.
Okay, that is an extremely fair rule, but it is vital that listeners calculate it correctly. You only claim what actually leaves your bank account.
Exactly.
So let's build this family's custom threshold. What are the specific pieces of the 2025 formula here?
I build it step by step.
The basic rate for a married couple, which is 607 euros.
Okay.
Number two. The dependents allowance for two children under 16 at exactly 57 euros each, which comes to 114 euros.
Got it.
Number three, the weekly mortgage converting 1,200 a month comes to 276 euros and 92 cents.
Right.
Number four, the weekly mortgage protection converting 52 a month comes to 12 euros.
Okay.
Number five, the combined weekly travel for both parents, which is 42 euros and 40 cents.
Yep.
And number six, the weekly net childcare cost, which we established, is 213 euros and 69 cents.
That's a lot of variables.
It is. But when you add all of those specific figures together, this family's qualifying financial threshold is exactly 1,266 euros and 1 cent a week.
Okay, their custom hurdle is 1,266 euros and 1 cent. What is their actual take-home pay broken down to a weekly figure?
We take their net monthly income of 5,450. Multiply by 12, divide by 52. Their monthly net income is exactly 1,257 euros and 69 cents.
Well, let me look at those numbers. Their income is 1,257 euros and 69 cents. Their threshold is 12,266 euros and 1 cent. They qualify.
They qualify.
That is wild.
By a margin of literally less than 10 euros a week, but the margin does not matter. They meet the criteria, and both parents, as well as both children, gain access to the GP visit card.
I really want the listener to sit with the psychological impact of that for a second. Think about what that means for a family with two young kids operating on a margin of 10 euros a week.
It's tight.
It's incredibly tight. Winter rolls around, the heating bills go up, and suddenly one kid has a fever and the other has a persistent cough. Without this card, that family is looking at 140 euros just to get through the door of the clinic before they even buy the antibiotics. That 140 euros might literally be their entire grocery budget for the week. The GP visit card removes that agonizing choice. It's huge. Let's synthesize one more example from the text just to make sure we cover all family dynamics. Imagine a single parent.
Okay, let's construct a scenario based on the single parent example in the guidelines. This is a single parent, let's call him Yan, living in a rented accommodation with one 11-year-old child. His net monthly income is exactly 3,550 euros.
3.5 grand net, a very strong single income.
Yes, it is. He pays exactly 800 euros a month in rent. Now, for his travel expenses, the HSE uses a very specific calculation.
How does that work?
The guidelines state that travel to work costs can be calculated based on the distance traveled at a rate of exactly 18 cents per kilometer.
Wait, I need to pause on that. 18 cents a kilometer, that is fascinating.
Yes.
So if you drive to work, you don't just guess your petrol costs or show receipts. You literally map your route, calculate the total kilometers driven for the week, and multiply it by 18 cents to get your allowable expense.
According to the specific rules laid out in the sources, yes.
Yeah.
For petrol or diesel usage commuting to work, it is calculated based on distance at that exact rate of 18 cents per kilometer.
Yeah.
In this scenario, based on his commute, that works out to exactly 27 euros a week.
That is such a granular, powerful detail. I mean, yeah. It means you aren't penalized if you have to live far away from your job because of the housing crisis. You map the commute and you claim it.
Exactly. It's very pragmatic.
Okay. Let's build the single parent's threshold.
The components are.
The basic rate for a single parent, which is the higher rate of 607 euros.
Right.
Two, the dependent allowance for one child under 16, which is 57 euros.
Okay.
Three, the weekly rent, converting 800 a month, comes to 184 euros and 62 cents.
Yep.
And four, the weekly travel allowance based on the mileage rate, which is 27 euros. Adding those together gives a custom threshold of exactly 875 euros and 62 cents a week.
And what is his actual weekly income? We take the 3,550 a month, multiply by 12, divide by 52. That comes to exactly 819 euros and 23 cents.
So his income of 819 euros and 23 cents is well below his custom threshold of 875 euros and 62 cents.
Meaning?
Therefore, he qualifies for the GP visit card for both himself and his child.
What we're seeing across all these different scenarios, with the single renter, the married family, the single parent, is a really clear, undeniable message. You cannot self-reject based on your gross salary.
You absolutely cannot.
You have to do the math.
Yeah.
You need to sit down at your kitchen table with your most recent payslips, your lease agreement, or mortgage statement, and calculate your commute at 18 cents a kilometer. Because this system is actively looking for reasons to accommodate the financial realities of working families.
The examples prove beyond a doubt that the cost of living is directly factored into the means test.
Now, while the adults in the house have to do all this granular math, you know, converting monthly mortgage protection premiums to weekly figures, subtracting childcare grants from gross bills, there is one group in the house who gets to bypass the bouncer entirely.
Ah.
We need to talk about children under the age of 8.
Yes, this is one of the most straightforward and uncompromising policies in the entire stack of HSE guidelines.
Straightforward is good.
If a child lives in Ireland and is under 8 years old, they automatically qualify for a GP visit card.
Automatically. No math required.
The source text is absolute on this point. I will quote it directly. It does not matter what your income is. You do not need to apply.
I really want to stress test the logic of that because it sounds almost too good to be true. Are we saying that even if a family earns, say, 1 million euros a year, they own their home outright, they have zero allowable expenses, their 7-year-old child still gets free GP visits?
Yes. Based exactly on the official text we are analyzing, income is entirely irrelevant for the under 8s.
That's amazing.
It is an automatic entitlement. The architecture of this policy is treated much like the over 70s cohort.
Oh, right, the over 70s.
Yes. The documents note that everyone aged 70 or over is eligible for free GP care regardless of income, referencing registration forms that are current as of January 2025. The under 8s operate on that exact same principle of universal age-based access.
But there has to be a mechanism to make it happen, right? You quoted the text saying you do not need to apply.
Correct.
But if I don't apply, how does the doctor know I don't have to pay? Does the card just, you know, magically appear in the mail on their birthday?
No, no. The crucial distinction that HSE is making here is the difference between applying and registering.
Oh, okay. What's the difference?
Because the card is not means tested for this age group, you do not submit an application filled with your financial details, pay slips, and rent receipts.
Because it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you absolutely still need to register the child's existence with the state. Ah. There is a separate streamlined registration process specifically for this group. You provide their name, their PPS number, and you link them to a participating GP.
Ah, I understand now. The HSE just needs to know the child exists and who their specific doctor is, so the state knows who to actually pay for the consultation.
Precisely. It's administrative, not financial.
But there is absolutely zero financial math involved in that registration.
You're
So if you are listening right now and you have a 6-year-old and you haven't registered them because you assumed your joint income of 100 grand disqualified you, pause this right now and go to the HSE website. You are literally leaving free healthcare on the table.
You really are. It is a universal right for that specific age bracket. The state has simply decided that financial barriers should not exist for early childhood primary care.
Okay, let's zoom out and look at the practical next steps. You, the listener, have done the math at the kitchen table. You realize your high rent and your massive childcare costs actually pull your seemingly high gross salary down below your custom threshold.
You know you qualify.
You know you qualify, and you know your 7-year-old is automatically in. The biggest question now is execution. How do you actually get this card? What is the paperwork like, and how long does it take? Let's start with the medical card.
The application process differs depending on which card you are seeking. For the medical card, you apply online.
Night.
Because the medical card grants such comprehensive, all-encompassing coverage, the documentary evidence required is strict and non-negotiable.
Which makes
You
sense.
must provide photos, scans, or photocopies of the original documents showing your income and your expenses.
So we're talking about uploading PDFs of your pay slips, your bank statements, your rent receipts.
Yes. And crucially, the guidelines state these documents must clearly show your name and address.
Right.
Furthermore, when proving your allowable expenses, you must show proof of current payments dated strictly within the last 3 months.
Within the last 3 months. So an old lease agreement from 2 years ago is not sufficient.
No. The HSE needs to see the bank transfer proving you actually paid that rent last month.
That makes perfect sense. If they are going to cover hospital stays and maternity care, they need hard evidence that the math we just talked about is accurate today, not 3 years ago.
Exactly.
But what about the GP visit card? The one that most working people will be aiming for.
This is where the system gets very interesting and, frankly, very modernized.
Okay, how so?
The guidelines state that the only way to apply for the GP visit card is online. You need to log in and input your PPS number, your date of birth, your income and expense details, your marital status, and the details of any dependent children.
Standard online form stuff.
Yes. But here's the most fascinating detail directly from the source text. You do not need to provide any documents with your application.
Wait, I need to make sure I heard that right. No documents.
No documents with your application.
We just spent the last half hour explaining the intricate math of converting monthly rent to weekly figures and calculating commutes at 18 cents a kilometer, and I don't even have to prove it when I apply.
Initially, no. The HSE explicitly states you do not need to upload documents when you hit the submit button on the online form.
That's crazy.
However, the very next sentence in the guidelines provides the vital caveat.
I knew there was a catch.
But we may contact you at a later date and ask you for proof of your income and expenses.
Okay, I see the architecture of this now. It's almost like an honesty box system for the GP visit card initially, designed to speed up access to primary care.
Yes, that's a good way to describe it.
They trust you to do the math correctly and input the numbers, but they fully reserve the right to audit you later.
That is exactly how it functions. It removes the immediate friction of having to scan and upload 10 different PDFs just to get into the system when you might be sick and need a doctor quickly.
Right, which is brilliant if you're in a pinch.
But it also means you absolutely cannot guess or make up the numbers. If you type in that your rent is $1,250 a month, you had better have the bank statements in a folder ready to prove it if they come knocking 6 months from now.
So the actionable advice here is do the math honestly. Apply online in 10 minutes, but keep every single rent receipt, childcare invoice, and pay slip safely stored in a digital folder. Don't throw them away just because the online form didn't ask for an upload on day one.
Exactly. Keep the receipts.
What about processing times? If someone listening applies today, when can they actually walk into the clinic for free?
Looking strictly through the official provided sources, they do not list specific processing timeframes.
Okay.
There is no official guarantee that it takes exactly 2 weeks or it takes 30 days.
Which usually means how long is a piece of string? It probably depends entirely on how busy the processing department is that month.
Likely. However, there is a key technological detail in the guidelines that makes the wait less painful for the GP visit card.
What's that?
The sources state. The digital version of your card will appear in the HSE Health app.
Oh, that is brilliant. So you aren't sitting by the door waiting for the postman to deliver a physical piece of plastic before you can see a doctor.
Right. Once the online application is approved, the digital card simply populates in your app, and you can show that directly to the GP receptionist.
That's so efficient.
It is. The key takeaway regarding processing times isn't to worry about counting the exact number of days. It's to apply right now. Gather your data, run your custom formula, and submit the online form today so the clock starts ticking immediately.
Okay, but we have to address the worst-case scenario.
Which is?
What happens if you do all of this? You sit at the kitchen table, you run your numbers, you are absolutely sure your massive rent and your childcare costs bring your net income below your custom threshold. You apply online, and a few weeks later, you open the app and there's no card. Instead, you get an email saying application refused.
It happens.
Is that the end of the road? Are you just permanently banned from the system?
Absolutely not. A refusal is not necessarily the final word.
Yeah.
The HSE guidelines are very clear that there is an established appeals process.
Yep.
In fact, right on the main applying for a medical card portal, there is an explicit link titled Appeal a Medical Card Decision.
Okay, so you have a formal right to push back. I know some listeners who have navigated the healthcare system might have heard terms like getting a review or applying for a discretionary medical card when they get rejected.
Right.
How do those specific processes work based on our documents?
It is extremely important to be precise with the information we have in front of us.
Okay.
While the broader healthcare system may have internal mechanics for things like discretionary cards, where a medical officer might decide you need a card due to severe medical hardship, regardless of the financial means test, the specific stack of official source material we are analyzing today does not detail the internal workings of discretionary cards or provide specific review timelines.
Okay. We have to stick strictly to the guidelines we are translating. So if our sources don't detail the discretionary process, what is our solid, actionable advice to the listener who gets that refusal email?
The immediate advice is to utilize that official appeal a medical card decision link.
Right.
Do not accept a first refusal as a life sentence. If you get rejected, the very first thing you should do is go back to your kitchen table and audit your own math.
Audit the math.
Yes. Did you accurately include your travel costs at 18 cents a kilometer? Did you remember to convert your monthly mortgage protection premium to a weekly figure?
Oh, that's a common one.
Did you accidentally include the gross childcare cost instead of correctly deducting the National Child Care Scheme grant?
Right, because a simple data entry error on your end or a miscalculation of a weekly conversion could be the entire difference between a yes and a no. If we think back to our family example, their custom threshold was 12,266 euros and 1 cent, and their income was 12,257 euros and 69 cents.
They qualified by less than 10 euros.
Exactly. When you are operating on margins that thin, absolute accuracy is everything.
Exactly. The appeal process is your opportunity to correct the record. It allows you to say, wait, look at these specifics of expenses again. Here's the proof.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, the main takeaway is that the math really is everything. We started this hour by talking about the bouncer at the club, the assumption that working people are automatically turned away. And I think we've thoroughly proven that the system is far more nuanced than that.
Much more nuanced.
The bouncer isn't just looking at your shiny gross salary. He is actively looking for reasons to accommodate the reality of being a working person in Ireland in 2025.
The guidelines clearly show a system designed to factor in the true cost of living.
Let's do a really quick recap of the journey we've been on, just to cement the principles. First, we established the difference in the cards. The medical card covers almost everything, including hospital stays and 2 euro 50 cent prescriptions.
Right.
But the GP visit card is the hidden gem for working professionals. It acts as the financial fire door, covering the cost of seeing your doctor, which encourages early intervention.
Second, we learned that high earnings do not automatically disqualify you. The means test looks exclusively at your net income against a custom threshold.
Crucial point.
And that threshold is built from a basic rate like the 418 euros for a single person in 2025, plus allowances for dependents, including a massive 117 euro bump for a child in college without a grant.
Third, those allowable expenses are the key to unlocking the door. High rent, high mortgage payments, childcare costs strictly minus the NCS grant, and even the cost of commuting calculated at 18 cents a kilometer. These are the exact mathematical levers that pull a seemingly high salary down to a qualifying level.
Fourth, we covered that children under 8 get free GP visits automatically, regardless of what you earn, but you must actively register them.
And finally, the application for the GP visit card is fully online. It operates initially on an Honesty Box system without needing upfront documents, and it delivers the card digitally straight to your phone app. And if they say no, you have the right to appeal and check your math.
Exactly. Now, before we finish, it is incredibly important that I add a clear disclaimer here.
Yes, please do.
In this deep dive, we are translating official HSE documents and citizens' information guidelines, specifically noting the limits applicable to 2025 as they're written in our sources. We are not offering personalized medical or financial advice.
No, we are not.
Your financial situation is entirely unique. You must confirm your own personal situation by visiting hse.ie, using their online calculators, or by speaking directly with citizens' information.
Absolutely. Do not take our word as final law for your specific life. Run your own numbers on the official platforms. But as we leave you today, I want to offer a broader thought to mull over, something that builds on the philosophy of everything we've discussed today.
Okay.
We've spent this entire deep dive explaining how allowable expenses like astronomical rent and massive childcare bills are the exact mathematical levers that unlock state healthcare access.
Yeah.
If you really think about the mechanics of that, what does it say about the true cost of living?
It's a sobering thought.
If the state's own mathematical formula recognizes that a professional taking home over 3,000 euros a month literally cannot afford a 70-euro doctor's visit because their landlord is taking so much of their paycheck, it raises a fascinating question. Is state-provided healthcare quietly acting as a hidden subsidy to keep the housing market afloat?
Wow. That is a profound question about how different sectors of the economy intersect.
It's something to think about. The bouncer at the club isn't just looking at what you have left over. He's looking at exactly who took your money before you even got to the door. Think about that the next time you pay your rent.